So the course will be about, well, it's called Quantum Field Theory Curve Spacetime. So basically, we'll focus on topics where both quantum properties of fields and curvature of spacetime are important. And besides being just, you know, like a beautiful theoretical subject, it has two very important applications. So one is physics of black holes. That's what we will be focusing on. So first topic, like two main topics will be physics of black holes. And the second topic, well, very early universe and particle production or production of primordial perturbations in the very early universe. A is more like of theoretical interest, but then it's very important for actually our understanding of physics, perhaps our understanding of quantum gravity. Whereas the second one has really like observable predictions and a number of these predictions have been verified. So that's kind of application of this formalism of particle production, you know, like of quantum fluctuations in the early universe, has produced testable predictions and which have been successfully tested so far. Okay, we are looking heavily to see if there are any kind of discrepancies between predictions and observations, but so far none. Okay, so that's so far for the topics. Now about organization. So we'll have six 2-hour lectures, like over 6 weeks, plus 1 hour of seminars. So these morning sessions, well, except the first day, they will be seminars where you will actually tell me your solutions of the exercises that I will be giving you after the lectures, or actually during the lectures. And then I will also distribute these exercises in some PDF files. So I plan to establish a Google Drive. So that's why I'm collecting your emails, so that I basically have access to it. And there I will be posting my lecture notes, the scans, and also the exercises, like weekly exercises. All right, there is one remark here that last lecture perhaps will be on April 14 instead of April 7, because April 7 is a holiday. So yeah, so basically the course will be 5 weeks, five lectures in March and one in April. Yeah, I think we'll decide what is most convenient. Let me put my email. Yeah. So that you can contact me, feel free to contact me about any question with any questions about the course. For those who want to receive credit for the course, there will be a take-home exam. So basically, we'll have at least a week to solve a number of problems, which are, I think, at the same level as what we will be discussing during the lectures, during the course. And you will have to handle to me somewhere in the second half of April, basically. Now, about literature. So, literature. We have one textbook, which part of the course is based on, which is Birrell and Davis. It's Quantum Fields in Curved Space. Yeah, just a second, let me finish writing. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I said that there's this textbook plus original papers. Yeah. Some of the material I will be presenting is based on, will be based on the original papers that discuss these topics. And of course, I encourage you to interrupt me at any point and ask questions. So let me first ask if you have any questions about organization and this stuff.
So what about the other book, Mukhanov-Vinitsky?
You can use it. Yeah, there are other books, of course, on quantum field theory. And yeah, you are encouraged to find the one you kind of is closest to your heart. But I will be following this one, for example, in notations. Well, not all of them, but yeah, at least some of them, and kind of the pattern of this. Okay, any other questions? Okay, then let's start. To have an idea what kind of, I mean, where yeah, to have an idea where basically a combination of gravity and quantum principles become interesting, let's start as a teaser, or warm-up, with the derivation of black hole entropy. So, derivation of black hole entropy. Okay, black hole, BH is for black hole, or also, or either Bekenstein-Hawking also, because that whole like program or idea was initiated by Jacob Bekenstein in his seminal papers, which I give here. So, Physical Review D 72333 and Physical Review D 93292 74. Beautiful papers. If you are interested, I encourage you to read them. I'm going to give a kind of brief, simple sketch of them or of the idea which was proposed. So. Yeah, so let's start. So the first thing is to start with Schwarzschild metric. So consider a black hole. And the black hole is described by Schwarzschild metric, which is ds square is equal to, yeah, that will also give us, this discussion will give us chance to fix notations and conventions. So let me say what is what. So here, t is time variable, r is a radial variable, and this d omega square is the metric on the two-dimensional sphere, which surrounds the black hole. So some angular variables are entered here. I won't need explicitly, you know, this expression. So for conventions, we'll be using the system of units where h bar is equal to speed of light. Is equal to gravitational constant and is equal to 1. So all of them are 1. The metric signature will be minus, plus, plus, plus.
Boltzmann constant
also? Yeah, that's always 1. So are you familiar with this metric? I don't feel enthusiasm. Yeah, okay, great, very good. Okay, so in this metric, like there's an apparent coordinate singularity at radius equal to 2m, right? Because this becomes infinite, okay, this becomes zero, so that's not good. But this is not a true singularity. So the first thing, let's see that it's not a true singularity, but just a coordinate artifact. So for that, we consider maximal extension of this metric. Yeah, so this metric makes sense, or kind of is good, at r bigger than 2m, and that's where it describes maybe like physical universe or physical like space around the black hole. But what happens if we want to cross the divide? Yeah. So for that we use approach proposed by Kruskal or Kruskal coordinates. So how do we introduce them? Yeah, the idea here, by the way, yeah, what these coordinates are good for. They are good because the metric will become regular at this point in these coordinates. So basically remove this coordinate singularity. So what we do? So first we introduce two light-like variables, or two light-like coordinates, u and v. Where this r star is just related to the radial coordinate by this integral. We actually can even make it. And we get 2m log r over 2m minus 1, something like this. So what this coordinate is about? What does it do? It actually absorbs this factor in here and actually pulls it out. So yeah, let me write it here. So it brings this part of the metric into the following form. 1 minus 2m over r minus dt square plus dr star square. Yeah. So this part becomes very similar to flat metric. And only in front we have an overall factor that kind of controls this whole metric, this whole part of the metric. So that's what this r star does. And when this big r, when this original r varies from 2m to plus infinity, r star varies from minus infinity to plus infinity. That's clear from here. So in other words, when you approach horizon, this to approach horizon, it takes like infinite interval in this r star. So that's why it's sometimes called tortoise coordinates. So basically, you try to approach. It's a bit following this paradox of Achilles and tortoise, that tortoise will never that Achilles will never overtake a tortoise. Okay, so that's this in this coordinate, indeed, he won't. So if he uses this one. Well, anyway, so that's called tortoise coordinate, and okay, we did this first step. Okay, that's not the end of the story, of course, because okay, so far what we achieved is just that we pulled out this overall factor in front. So in these coordinates u and v, the metric becomes this. Where this r must be understood as functions, the function of u and v. Yeah, go ahead.
So I mean, isn't like the singularity still like hidden in the like change of coordinates or something? Because you said it's not a true singularity. We can remove it by doing that change of coordinates. So sure, like it doesn't seem there's still, because like the log becomes infinite as, you know, the log diverges as r equals to u.
True. So the change of coordinate is singular,
but
the metric is not. Yeah. So well, actually, this metric is still singular. By the way, here I haven't yet I haven't yet achieved what I want, because this still vanishes when r reaches 2m, and that okay, that's some point in this in this coordinate chart. Actually, it's a point which corresponds to u and v infinite, like somewhere. But our goal is actually to go across this singular point. And to do that, we make a change. We now rescale these coordinates, right? Because you see they enter in a very simple way. They enter as their differentials enter as just products. So in principle, any change of coordinates of the type, like u bar equals some function of f of u, and v bar is a function, well, another function in principle of v, will preserve this form. Will preserve this form of the metric. And we can, we can devise this change in such a way that the point are equal, well, this horizon, well, we haven't yet discussed that this horizon, but okay, this would be singular point r equal to m is brought actually to a finite distance in this u bar and v bar, and perhaps we can also cross beyond. We're going to see if we can or not. So I suggest to you an explicit change here, which would be of this form. So this u bar and v bar, they are exponentially related to these to the original coordinates u and v. So also original kind of interval where u and v change like vary from minus infinity to infinity. Here in this, in terms of u bar and v bar, corresponds to negative u. So u bar changes from minus infinity to zero. Yeah, let me write this way. So it's minus infinity to zero, and v bar from zero to plus infinity. Right? Okay, so in this sense, we kind of shrank, we have shrunk the whole infinite interval into half intervals. Or like infinite lines into half lines. Okay, good. So that's, I mean, if we do this change, what do we get?
Same.
Yeah.
I thought that the idea of extending the space-time to like see, like have coordinates that coincide the horizon was to have some geodesics that cross the horizon and then parameterize space-time with the parameter along the geodesic. Mm-hmm. Is this what we're doing here with like null geodesics?
Yes. Yes, exactly. So what you are saying is a more like proper mathematical formulation of what we are doing. Yeah, but exactly, we are just using null rays, u, v equal constant. These are null rays. Along these rays, we can reparameterize the, you know, like the these rays using like different coordinates, and yeah, we see that they can pass through. So basically, okay, I just take this formula, substitute it to the metric, and get. Yeah, this expression. Yeah, that's a bit of algebra. Okay, I am not doing it here on the blackboard. But yeah, it's kind of simple algebra. Where this r, well, it is a function of u and v. U bar V bar now. Let me also write this expression. Well, I cannot, I mean, I write it implicitly. Yeah, we can, well, it's hard to express R as function of U and V explicitly, but okay, it's just determined by this equation. So what we see from here? We see that original like problematic point r equal to m corresponds to the point where either u bar or v bar becomes zero, well, which makes sense because yeah, from given our previous considerations, but the metric is perfectly fine, right? We go here and we see that now this part of the metric as well as this one is finite. Yeah, there is no zero, there is no infinity. Yeah, when u bar or v bar is equal to zero, then r is equal to m. Okay, this is just a number, actually, yeah, some number, and this is also finite. Okay, so let me move to another blackboard. Yeah, let's make a picture of that. That's always good to have a picture. So, like, imagine we have we have a plane. Yeah, I'm focusing on this part of the metric, which is kind of most interesting one, and omitting, well, or kind of keeping just in mind that there is a like to every point of my graph, there will be a sphere, a corresponding sphere, you know, like in the angles, in the two-dimensional angles. But yeah, what I will be plotting will be a plane of coordinates u bar and v bar, and I will draw the axis at angle 45 degrees. That's convention, and that's actually convenient, as you're gonna realize. So here we have this is a point where u and v are zero, or u bar are zero. This part of the plot corresponds to our original part of space-time, where u bar was negative, v bar was positive, and that's where we started. Yeah. So here r is infinity, and here r is equal to m, right? That's the point. Okay, the original problematic point. Yeah. Very good. So this is the region where u bar is positive, v bar is a positive as well. Yeah, we go this direction. And what do we have here? So first of all, we notice that we can perfectly extend, you know, like our metric past this line, and yeah, we have you know, the same metric inside. But here we cannot go infinitely, you know, infinitely far away, because at some point we'll hit the true singularity where r is equal to zero. Yeah. So even in this metric, if this r becomes zero, we have a problem. So let's look here, put r equals zero inside, and we see that this happens when this product of u and v become equal to 4m. Actually, I think it's 4m squared, yeah. I think I have a typo here. The square. And here I have, in this coordinate is a parabola, I have a line where u bar, v bar is equal to 4m squared, and that's bad. That's bad, and one actually can prove that this is a true singularity. So this one cannot be removed by any change of coordinate, because one can compute some invariant curvature invariance, for example, Riemann tensor squared, like square of the Riemann tensor, and it diverges in here. Yeah, I'm not proving it to you, but yeah, one can do that and show that one cannot extend past this line. So that's r equals zero, and that's a true singularity of this space-time. So this part is a kind of exterior black hole. This part, well, it's natural to say this is interior black hole. If I have an observer, if I have an object that goes, you know, from here in, like crosses this line, will happen will come inside. Yeah, go ahead.
So if the Riemann tensor does not diverge, it implies a total singularity?
No, that implies a true singularity.
It does not diverge. So
if it does not diverge. No, there is no direct. It's necessary condition to be regular, but not sufficient. Because, there are kind of maybe a bit. Artificial examples where Riemann can be finite, but the spacetime cannot be still extended beyond, you know, beyond there is still a singularity. Basically, the spacetime is not extendable past certain, you know, like certain regions, despite like curvature invariance being finite.
Is the high order derivatives going to be divergent?
Well, as has been discussed already, the true procedure, the proper procedure of extending spacetime, is to consider geodesics and see if the geodesics cross, you know, like the singularity in finite time, and basically you can extend, you know, like coordinates using these geodesics. So there can be that geodesics can somehow, you know, like accumulate, for example, at a point, and like tidal forces become infinite. So physically, like observers that would move on those geodesics actually would feel a problem. But I think curvature invariance need not diverge. Yeah, maybe there is some statement that you can find some courage invariant. I'm not sure. No, I think there are examples where even there are kind of like all scalars that you can make out of curvatures are finite, but these tidal forces diverge nevertheless. Yeah. But these are rather artificial. So in more simple examples that appear really like in physics, usually that's a very good diagnostics. Like if like all curvature invariants are finite, then yeah, that's most likely you can extend past this line. Right, but here we also got for free two more regions. Yeah, so we got the region U bar negative, V bar positive. No, V bar negative. and we also got this region where both of them are, I mean, this one is positive, this one is negative, yeah. Right. So, and like these two regions, I mean, these two regions are actually brothers or twins of these two. Yeah, so they have a very similar, they have actually exactly the same metric. Yeah, if I go here, I see that like the metric does not change if I change the sign of U and V simultaneously. Yeah, so they have the same metric. And here there is also a singularity when R is equal to zero. U bar V bar is equal to 4m squared. Yeah. So there is the singularity, which is actually this line is different from this. It's not, I mean, though R is the same here, but just because R is a double cover, you know, like of this whole spacetime. Yes. So or how to say, I mean, this spacetime double covers the values of R. So basically, for different points in this spacetime, I have a given value of R corresponds to two points in this spacetime. Yeah.
So like basically, R equals zero would be like a hyperbola or something in the U bar V bar plane.
It is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This is a hyperbola. This is another hyperbola. Yeah, and here we have another asymptotic region. Yeah, that's the funny part that. Here we also have R changing from, R is equal to 2m here as well. So this line also corresponds to 2m. Well, actually, I already said that, right? And here, eventually, R is equal to infinity if I go this direction. So in this like maximal extension of Schwarzschild metric, actually, I get two asymptotic regions and two black hole interiors. Actually, one of them is black hole, another is white hole. So what does it mean what I'm saying? It means the following. So if an object, if an observer, say Bob, experimentalist, gets inside this black hole, he can never communicate back with the outside. Yeah. If he wants to send a signal from here, let me take another color. The signals cannot propagate faster than light. So on this plot, they would move along lines of 45 degrees at most, or inside. Yeah, so the signals can move inside the cone of 45 degrees, bounded by lines of 45 degrees. And you see, like any signal he sends will hit the singularity and will never come outside. On the other hand, if we imagine somebody living in here, Alice is living here, then that's other way around. So actually, any signal that Alice sends, at least it's very easy to communicate with the outside. On the other hand, nobody from outside can send a signal to Alice. Yeah, that's kind of reverse to here. So here, Bob can come inside and get lost for us, basically not communicate with us anymore. On the other hand, Alice always communicates with us, but we cannot communicate with her. Yeah, let's make one more step, maybe. So that's a nice diagram, and that diagram is called Kruskal diagram, and already we kind of figure out that these causal relations from it. But it's more common to make one step further and to compactify it. Yeah, so this way it's kind of infinite, we're working in infinite plane, it's not very convenient object to draw. So one more step is to compactify and have what is called Penrose diagram. So Penrose diagram. And actually, compactification can be done in any way. It's again just by change of coordinates, change of these isotropic coordinates u bar v bar. So, for example, we can choose. We can say that. We can say that u prime is tangent of u bar. Other way around. So u bar is tangent of u prime. Yeah. This u prime will change from minus pi over 2 to plus pi over 2. And similarly with u bar. In fact, this tangent is just one option. The idea is really like to map an infinite line to an interval. And and we can always do it with these light-like coordinates without losing the causal relations, basically, without preserving everything. So if we do that with this Kruskal spacetime or Schwarzschild spacetime, we get the following picture. So here are the lines u prime, v prime. In this Penrose diagram, so why they are convenient? Okay, they are like they have finite extent, right? And you see everything looking on it. So we see all these causal relations. So all like light rays, they propagate at the angle 45 degrees here. So we know that Bob from here cannot communicate with us. Alice from here, I mean, we cannot communicate with Alice from here, and. Who is the third usually? I forgot. Bob, Alice. There was some Rick. Okay, let's say Rick. Living here cannot communicate with us at all. I mean, living kind of at really, really completely detached. Right? So this Rick can communicate with Bob, Alice can communicate with Rick, but we living here cannot do anything. Classically, okay.
It's not quantum yet.
It's not quantum yet, yeah.
Because you said classical.
So, what else? Okay, so there are these causal relations. Actually, let me take another. We can also think, what are like time-like lines and space-like lines here? So our original lines of t equal constant, for example, where are they here? T equal constant. T equal constant from the original metric, right? In there, I had the kind of asymptotic time t. So they are actually, one can figure out that they go this way, outside, in the outside region, which we understand, which we start with. They go this way. So in this sense, this point becomes space-like infinity. So that's really the point where r is equal to infinity and all lines converge there. Inside, so these are lines t equal constant. Inside black hole, I probably didn't spell it out explicitly. But after I'm done with this maximal extension, I can actually go back through all this coordinate redefinition and realize that the metric inside is also Schwarzschild. So in these regions, though they were not in the original kind of space-time, but in fact the metric in there is just has the same form, literally. And you can also think of it as analytic continuation. So basically, you have analytic function, and this metric was analytic. It had singularity here, but I can go kind of making coordinates a bit complex. I can go around and get in here, or alternatively going through this procedure of maximal extension. But what changes inside? That actually, just going back to this metric and looking at it. we see that this changes sign. Yeah. So and this. So now time coordinate is actually space-like, and R is time-like. So the lines of constant time, they will go like this. They will go like time-like coordinates, the time-like curves. They will go vertically. On the other hand, radius, like the lines of constant radius, here they were like this, are constant. So they were time-like, right? I mean, there could be observers living at fixed R, whereas inside they become space-like. So now an observer cannot live at constant R. Yeah?
R constant inside.
R constant inside is now a space-like surface. Yeah. So an observer cannot live at constant R. Can live at constant T, that's okay, but cannot live at constant R inside. So that's why I necessarily get into singularity. Okay, the final comment here that, okay, this is of course very nice. This is maximal extended spacetime, and we'll be using it. But one should also realize what is physically relevant and what is physically irrelevant. So not all of this diagram is physically relevant, at least for black holes that are obtained in a collapse. Because of course you can, I mean, yeah, one indication that there is something maybe not completely physical is that these regions, yeah? So what is this region that can communicate with us, but we cannot communicate with this? We kind of probably don't have it. Yeah, your question?
So, I mean, I've been wondering, okay, now I think it's the time to ask that question. So if the R becomes time-like, so R inevitably goes, you know, to a lower value until you reach R equals zero. That's as inevitable as time moves forward outside the...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's...
But, in this part, but not in this part.
Yeah, basically. But then does this imply that inside the horizon, since T is space-like, that means you can like theoretically go back in time? Because like T is space-like, so you can like...
No, because T is not time anymore.
Yeah, but like you can go back in the T coordinate, which is...
You can, yeah, here you can go, you know, in T coordinate, you can kind of travel, yeah. But it's not, I mean, call it different letter if you don't like T. I mean, T is just a letter. It's not time. So, yeah, so if we have some, if we imagine a black hole that is formed after, like as a result of collapse of, say, a star, yeah, then these regions actually are not present. I mean, they may still appear, by the way, as mathematical tools, but they are not physically there. So no observer or nobody would be able to really kind of probe them. So, why? Because if there is also matter that collapses, the metric changes. Yeah. So here, what I mean, the Schwarzschild solution is solution of Weikmann-Einstein equation. So without any matter. So this solution applies only outside matter. Yeah. And I can imagine there could be some. Well, if there is matter, well, it has some boundary. So I have to cut basically everything. Yeah. I think I want another color. Let me see if I have another color. Yeah, here. So everything, so basically, yeah, I have to cut the part of space-time, which is inside the matter, and basically throw it away. So only this external part is physically like relevant. Well, inside matter, of course, also there is some metric, but that's different. I have to solve different equations, and that will be more, most likely it will be like closer to flat metric, or kind of some kind of metric regular at the center, you know, of this star until it hits the singularity. Okay, any questions?
This is a rigorous argument that collapses through, right? It's basically just non-spherical collapse, it wouldn't work like that.
For non-spherical collapse, it would work to some extent. Well, depends what you mean. I mean, the Penrose diagram becomes more complicated because here, as long as I'm spherical, as I already said, every point corresponds to a sphere, and it's easy kind of to split the radial part, well, time and radius, and sphere. Whereas, if the space-time is not spherical, I can still have like notion of Penrose diagram, but now it is multidimensional, so. Yeah, so it becomes kind of harder to visualize. And still it will be true that like the metric outside will be some kind of vacuum solution and the metric inside will be like regular at the center. So kind of until again, it hits singularity. So these statements will be still true. But yeah, for simplicity, we are focusing here on spherical case. Okay, let me give you an exercise related to that. So exercise one, draw Penrose diagram for two simple space times. So a Minkowski space, flat Minkowski space. In both cases, it's Minkowski space, but the two cases, they differ by dimensionality. So let's say case A is four-dimensional Minkowski spacetime, the one we are familiar with, and case B is two-dimensional, okay? So I'm claiming there will be difference. Okay, you will, it's for you to figure out what the difference is. Okay. Any questions? Very good. Okay, so far it was warm up about with these Penrose diagrams and everything. Now let's go next, kind of closer to this idea of entropy. And first just think about the following Gedanken experiment. So we take a box with gas, right, at some temperature. And this gas has an entropy, okay? And we take this box and throw it into black hole. Well, after that, we don't have this access to this gas anymore, right? It's there. Yeah, it's somewhere here, and we don't know what happens to it. So we lose the entropy. Yeah, so this entropy disappeared. But on the other hand, we have a second law of thermodynamics that says that entropy should not decrease. Yeah, because in this picture, it would be like the entropy decreased. And you know it decreased in principle, because of course you can imagine that you just take this box and put it outside, of this room, say. But it would look like it also disappeared. No, in the case of the room, you can go out and check. In the case of black hole, you cannot go out and check. You really don't know what happens to it, you know? So this suggests that probably we should actually ascribe some entropy to black holes. So when they absorb something, their entropy changes. They kind of absorb this entropy into themselves. Okay, so that's kind of very general motivation. It's supported by two observations. Or by two facts, okay. So one is that these two facts from general relativity, that a vacuum solution of Einstein equations, which is very everywhere regular and have regular horizons, is just a black hole determined by three numbers. So mass, by two numbers, mass and angular momentum. That's kind of the most general thing you can have, if it's a regular solution, it has just two parameters, mass and angular momentum.
What about charge?
Yeah, that's not vacuum solution. Yeah, that's why I said there could be three. So in principle, like let's say in parentheses, we can also have something like charges. But okay, if we have charges, we also have electric fields, and okay, it's not a vacuum solution, strictly speaking. But yeah, that's also true that like maybe even more general solutions of yeah, I think the statement can be generalized to solutions of Einstein Young-Mills equations or Einstein Maxwell equation. Okay, no, let's not do Young-Mills. Yeah, so the more general solution of the system of equations with metric and say abelian gauge fields, yeah, is just a charged black hole characterized by mass, angular momentum, and charge. Can be several charges in principle, yeah. Q1, Q2, and so on. But yeah, most simplest way is to think about electric charge, which can be in principle there. So if we kind of think about defining entropy for a black hole, it should be a function of just these numbers. Yeah, and this statement, by the way, that's called Noether theorem. So basically, there is Noether. So whatever you try to do with black hole, you can perturb it, but then it kind of settles down to just something which has these three parameters. Or even, as I say, let's kind of postpone this. So two parameters. And the second statement is that no matter what you do with black hole, it turns out that the area of its horizon never decreases. So that's also in general relativity. I mean, the statement from classical general relativity that when there are theorems that say that in various processes involving black holes, for example, you can imagine merging several black holes together, or just I don't know, taking a black hole and this black hole accretes some matter. So in all these processes, the area of the horizon will grow. Yeah, I think I should have said that actually. Okay, one thing probably which I didn't spell out that this line is horizon. Yeah, I'm kind of operating freely with this term. So yeah, this line which separates causally connected regions, they are called horizon, and of course they have area. So in this simple case of Schwarzschild, the area is just the radius of this horizon, the radius of the horizon squared times 4 pi. So it's 4 pi times 2m squared, yeah? So 16 pi m squared. So for Schwarzschild, well, one can also do the same for rotating black holes and for charged black holes. I mean, one can calculate this area. And as I said, I mean, no matter what happens, this area never decreases. So that's actually the same property which we expect from entropy, right? So that led to the idea, the proposal, is to identify the entropy of black hole with area of the horizon, perhaps with some coefficient, which a priori we have to fix it, and we'll fix it later on. So for Schwarzschild black hole, it would just mean that I have alpha times 16 pi m squared. Okay, so that's proposal, but now the question is, does it make sense? And for this purpose, we need to subject it to certain tests. I mean, to some tests at least, okay? So, and perhaps also kind of these tests, they will allow us to estimate this coefficient alpha. So the first kind of simplest process where I can imagine kind of putting entropy into black hole is the following. So I take a particle with spin 1/2, say, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, just a second. Yeah. So I take a particle with spin 1/2, so it's a qubit in other words, yeah? So I take a qubit, and adiabatically lower it into black hole. So qubit I can put in the beginning, I can put in a mixed state so that this qubit or particle has entropy log 2. Yeah. So then, okay, I take it and I carefully lower it down. Okay, I'm allowing me to do all possible kind of devices. So maybe I do some box, put this qubit in a box, attach this box to a string and carefully lower down and then let it go. So in this way, I, like in outside, I lose entropy log 2. And the question is whether as a result of this process, the entropy of black hole increases or not. Yeah, let me see how I'm doing on time. Shall I start this derivation or better answer your question? Okay, go ahead with the question.
The area, so the 16 pi m squared, is it like the proper area or the area like in coordinate space?
It actually comes from this, let me see if I still have it here. Yeah. It comes from this part of the metric.
Okay.
So here we have sphere.
Yeah.
And basically we measure the area of this sphere, you know, at constant r.
Yeah.
And what I'm talking, yeah, it's physical area. So it's proper area because, you know, here, you know, this is physical length.
Oh, yeah, right.
And then, you know, using this length, kind of this ruler, you measure the area. Yeah.
Yeah.
More questions? Okay, I think let's stop for this hour.